It is back to school time for UNC students. School officially beginning tomorrow. More than 4,000 new first-year students have arrived in Chapel Hill, about ready to get classes underway. Fall sports are about to get underway as well, so a lot of excitement around campus. And joining us now by phone from the center of all the activity, the Kenan Flagler Business School, Dr. Deb Stroman. Thank you so much.
Thank you. What a weekend. I'll tell you, with all the students moving in, new construction, I think there was a new tag that was given to the university. It's called the University of New Construction. So we're navigating that. And then we had an awesome annual event every year called Fall Fest, where we shut down South Road across from Carmichael and Woolen. And we just have a great time having the first-year students become familiar with UNC and its culture. And it's just an amazing evening of thousands of students out last night getting to know each other and joining student organizations. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful celebration that follows convocation.
And the Good Neighbor Initiative tonight and a whole week of welcome that's ongoing, plus events heading into the fall months as well. And I was talking with this about this with, I think it was Kristen Smith last week, that we really take it for granted here in Chapel Hill, because town-government relations and relations between sort of all year-long residents and students are actually really good, and we have events like this to keep them that way. This is not something that other college towns experience, but we're lucky that way.
That's exactly right, and I think that's a part of what makes UNC so special. When other students visit our campus from other colleges, there is that sense of there's just something that goes on here that just breeds a togetherness, a family atmosphere. We really, really are very intentional to make sure that students feel that this is now your second home. And I think it starts that first year, the first week that they come to Chapel Hill.
So classes getting underway, again, fall sports getting underway too. Obviously, as per usual, most of the talk is about football, but other than football, obviously we're all looking forward to that. What other fall sports are you most looking forward to?
Well, I am basketball, but I want to start off with soccer. We've got two outstanding soccer programs. Both of them are ranked in the top 10, men's soccer number 5, and of course they reached the NCAA quarterfinals last year, and actually it was for the sixth time in the last 7 years, which is pretty impressive when you consider that the ACC is arguably the number one conference for soccer, and they open up August 28th. And then women's soccer is ranked number 7, and of course people always chuckle about that because every year Anson Dorrance's teams are fighting for the national championship. Number one ranked team is Florida State, so we'll get a chance to get a taste of them early on before perhaps we meet them in the playoffs.
Nice, and then we're going to have some of those games, both men's and women's soccer, here on WCHL, too. So looking forward to that as the fall sports season gets underway. Of course, this past weekend was big, not just for UNC and everyone coming back to school. It was also PGA Tournament weekend in Wisconsin. Jason Day got a big record-setting win, 20 under par, broke Tiger Woods' record. And we've been talking about Jordan Spieth all year, but I didn't know until I read it. It didn't even occur to me until I read it today. Jason Day has had a share of the lead in every single major so far this year. This is his first one, but he's had as impressive of a run this year as Jordan Spieth has had.
Well, he absolutely has. I've been following Jason Day, and I hate to admit this on the air, but I am a crybaby. And at the end of that tournament, when he broke down on the 17th hole, knowing that he had captured his first major championship, I got a little teary-eyed and did a little bawling with him. But I think it's because he had such humble beginnings. I mean, this was a young man at, as a young teenager who was fighting and drinking. His mom basically sold their home to pay for his boarding school and golf. His father died when he was about 12 years old. So he's been going at this for so many years, and now to be at the top of what some people feel is the most elite sport in the world, as in it's for very, very wealthy people, to go from that and now to be, you know, to sketch your name in the history books of golf is pretty amazing. I'm really looking forward to this, I guess, post-Tiger era where we see right now it's looking like Jordan Spieth, who's now the number one golfer in the PGA, versus Rory, who's going to definitely fight back and try to get that back, and then Jason Day. So it's going to be pretty interesting over the next year watching what happens with these three young guns.
Do we officially call this the post-Tiger era?
I do. You know, I would love, and I think most people would love to have Tiger come back for another round to be competitive in the top 10. But I've decided that I'm going to stop putting my Zen sentiments in the in the air, so that Tiger can just relax and just try to be an older, successful golfer. But I do believe that the tide has turned. Tiger's game is no doubt the most skillful, but he also excelled mentally, and I just don't see that mental edge that Tiger has anymore. The sad thing is that the golf sport business has really, really taken a hit. Adidas is looking for a buyer for TaylorMade, which just shows the direction that what Tiger brought in the early 2000s with his popularity. Golf has lost about 5 million golfers during the past decade, and a lot had to do with Tiger and just all the types of people that he brought to the game. So I'm definitely saying it's a post-Tiger movement now.
We're speaking with Dr. Deb Sturman, UNC Kenan Flagler Business School, and since you copped to crying at sports, I have to say I do the same thing. In 2006, I'm a big Tigers fan. When the Tigers beat the Yankees in the ALDS, it was the first playoff series they had won in 22 years, and I was too young to remember 84, and some of the players jumped into the stands and they were celebrating with the fans, and that set me off. So I feel your pain.
Well, there's no doubt that is the mystique of sport. It is intangential. It is something that you can't predict the outcome for the most part. We do know there's fixing and things that goes on in some sports, but overall, just the experience of becoming attached to a team, and especially as a youngster, and then you live and you die with them. Certainly, it's not as important as some of the major things that go on in the world when we're talking about, again, poverty or feeding people. But certainly, sport is a great escape. It gives us the highs and the lows. It gives us a way to rally and become a community, and certainly that's what we do here at UNC. There's no doubt that sport plays a big, big part of why students come to this university. And so that feeling that we both have around the emotionalism with our teams, I think it's great. And I'm only hoping that we can continue to have very, very compelling sport figures that will take us to that point.
Absolutely. Well, again, we're talking with Dr. Deb Sturman, UNC Kenan Flagler Business School. She's an expert on sport analytics, and with that in mind, I want to turn to, for the last question, the big decision that got handed down today by the National Labor Relations Board, and people still sort of piecing together what the impact of this is going to be, overturning the ruling last year that said that Northwestern football players are technically university employees and therefore will be allowed to unionize. NLRB today said that Northwestern football players are students first and therefore not employees, therefore not allowed to unionize. And that's a decision that's going to have a pretty significant impact on the way college athletics organizes itself. So first of all, were you surprised by the decision? Second of all, what's your take on what the impact is going to be?
Definitely not surprised. It's a pretty complex thing to talk about in a quick radio discussion, but I encourage all of the WCHL radio audience, if they're interested, to examine the political side and the economic side of this ruling. First off, Northwestern and the NCAA are very, very happy with this ruling, but it's a private school, and the bulk of the football college bowl division is run by states. They're public institutions. So I think the National Labor Relations Board would have set a very, very weird precedent to try and invoke something that would support private schools when really that really does not run the major issues concerning college sport today. So the players, this all follows with that big movement to find out what can we do to bring more money to college players, in particular football and men's basketball. And so they thought that they didn't have good communication and possibly unfair labor practices. but the Northwestern athletic administrators were adamant that they felt that football indeed is just a part of the educational experience at Northwestern, and they get the best of the best. Competing in the Big Ten, you do get the wonderful facilities, you get the great apparel, you get to travel, you get to be on television. And so they felt that the communication was very good and that the athletes are not employees, and so there are no unfair labor activities going on. But nonetheless, the players decided that they were going to try to form the union. They even voted on it. But now with this ruling, basically the votes are going to be destroyed without even being counted. And the NCAA can sit back and now focus on some other particular concerns regarding the structure and the governance of college sport.
What do you think is going to come out of this?
Well, I love the fact that the students took it upon themselves to go down this route and to challenge something that they felt was not working for them. I'm a big fan of students who protest in a very, in a very positive way. It's important to express your feelings, and certainly they learned a lot about labor negotiations. They learned a lot about college structure, and certainly they got the attention of the NCAA and many people in the college sport world. But I think that overall you have to, again, look at what are the benefits of college sport being on major academic campuses where there is very, very outstanding academics. How do you manage that? How do you make sure that the students get the most out of their college sport career? And most of them who play Division I college football, as in the bowl championship level, most of them think that they're going to be in the NFL. And so when we can pay attention here and help them to balance that, they have to do a better job of thinking that, yes, we want you to focus and hopefully set your goals for the NFL. That means you're going to play harder, work better with your teammates, be respectful to your coaches and your professors, but also understand that you probably won't make it. The odds just aren't that high. And if you do make it, the average NFL career is less than 4 years, so you're still going to be young. So I think there's a lot of lessons for everybody here, but we have to do a better job preparing our college athletes, in particular men's basketball and football, for life after college sport.
I'll keep following the fallout from that decision. Dr. Deb Stroman, Keenan Flagler Business School, thank you so much, and welcome back to campus yourself as well.
Thank you, and I encourage if people get a chance to go to chapelboro.com. I did do a little pop article on the experience of being in South Africa with the NBA Africa game, and it talks a little bit about, you know, the power of sport and what it can do.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.